Welcome to this week's show. I am Bill Kearns, my co-host Dave Champion. Together we are
Totally Unprepared.
Today I wanted to start off actually by giving a couple shout-outs, if you will, to a couple of local companies. One of them is Rock Island Armory, part of Arms Corps. It's a local company here in Pahrump, Nevada. And just some great people that are working over there. Recently picked up a 1911 of theirs that they built for me. Just really good stuff. Great people, excellent customer service, and quality guns. I've been a 1911 guy for, I guess, about 12 years now. And good stuff. Great prices, good customer service, interactive website. Another one, a local company, that they're actually a franchise. It's Tire Works. I have to say, I have a car that I take to them to get my oil changed. Now, usually I change my own oil, but this car in particular, it's kind of difficult to change the oil. You have to take out the air filter and remove the entire air box and disconnect it to get to the oil filter. And it's not one of these enclosed oil filters. It's a loose filter inside of a canister of sorts. Yeah. So it's a bit of a messy job. I buy the oil. I buy the filter. I take it to them. And for $10, they change my oil. It's such a pain that these guys who are professionals that have the tools that have done it with this car a couple times.
Right, that is the thing.
It's an hour and 10 minutes for them to do this job. Well,
having the experience, the tools, and the environment is 90% of the job.
Yeah, and I'm happy to pay them the $10 to do this, and I usually tip the guy $5 or $10 for doing it too. And I'll sit there, I'll get some work done on the computer. But about 45 minutes after I got it changed, I got a call from the service manager there. He asked me to check under the car, see if the oil was dripping, because they found a little bit of oil where my car had been parked. Hmm. So I told him I'd look in the morning. Sure enough, there was some oil there. Took it back in. They took care of it. It ended up being a gasket that comes with the filter.
Right.
They had to replace it. So they had to spend $22, $23, whatever it was, on a replacement filter out of their own pocket, and then do all this again and put another quart of oil in there. I brought them an extra quart. But they did all of this for nothing more than the initial $10 and then the money I tipped the kid.
Just very few companies would even call the customer up because they saw a drop of oil on the ground. Let's start right there.
Right. I mean, I would have noticed it eventually without too much trouble. I mean, it's on my garage floor. But I got to say that they did the right thing and didn't charge me for the second filter or anything. I would have been happy to pay a couple of more bucks. I get it. Mistakes happen. But I got to tell you, the customer service and the genuine concern about it and keeping me in the loop as to what was going on. And, hey, you know, it wasn't a big deal. This is what it was. We found it. We'll make sure it doesn't happen again. I got to tell you, that's the sort of customer service company should have.
And you and I have talked about professionalism before in our private discussions. And I think we would agree that in this small town that we live in, there is perhaps a lack of it with many of the enterprises.
A number of areas, sure.
Yes. So when something like this happens, Tire Works, is that the name?
Tire Works, yeah.
When something like that happens, it's an appropriate thing to bring it up because they're clearly doing something better and different the way we'd want it done. Yeah, I got to laugh, though. Funny difference. You're pumping like the tire guys, right, and the gun guys. And like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I said, hey, go see Sparky for your tattoo.
So anyhow, good stuff. When good things around town happen, we want to talk about them.
Absolutely.
We meet good people and good businesses. We want to let you guys know about it and share some of our experiences. So Tire Works has really helped secure my business for doing all kinds of different things.
Awesome.
So
speaking of another kind of business.
Yeah. Okay. So
how is that for a segue?
Enterprising sort of entrepreneurial ideas.
Yep.
This woman who's made herself available to be the one who intercedes, if you so feel the need to break off your relationship and you don't want to address the other party about it.
Right, right. Because, you know, there's so many people, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this in my rant, there's so many people that are non-confrontational, which I would say I'm non-confrontational. I've known you a long time. I would say you're non-confrontational. But to me, non-confrontational means I don't want any conflict. It doesn't have to be.
Sure.
Okay. If it has to be, so
all in.
So be it.
All in. Right, if it has to be, yes.
Yeah. But I understand how they mean this. People who are non-confrontational, it doesn't matter how much it is needed. They fear confrontation so much. They hate confrontation so much. This gal actually charges, paying attention, $5.50.
Bargain base.
Yeah, no lie. Yeah. And she will email or text your significant other and I read one of her texts, and it's sort of like corporate with some empathy. It's like
rather disarming.
Yes, it's like, you know, good morning, Bill. I'm writing on behalf of Betty. I'm not going to say your woman's name. I'm writing on behalf of Betty, and Betty respects you and cares for you greatly, and has been thrilled to be in a relationship with you for all this time, and is a better person for it. However, she believes that perhaps the relationship has run its course and it's time to say goodbye. I mean, literally, that's how it reads. It's like a corporate message with a little bit more empathy. But for $5, you know, of course, the funny thing is, it really doesn't solve the problem.
Well, no, but it certainly, for $5.50, it opens the door
yes, it does.
That you might otherwise be a little bit afraid to open.
Right, because yeah. I think we've all been there. Even if you're like you and I, who don't shy away from necessary confrontation, it's a difficult conversation.
You know, it's funny you bring this thing up about necessary confrontation and unnecessary confrontation. This last Saturday night, it was just about 9 o'clock, I'm out back with my dogs, and I hear a gunshot. Followed by a couple more. And I'm like, this doesn't sound right. It sounds like it's moving. You know, it was windy. Don't really know. And then I start hearing it repeatedly. I'm like, okay, you know what? There's probably not that many deputies on at any one time because we're a little bit short in the sheriff's department when it comes mm-hmm. to deputies on the street. So I run inside, zip up my tack boots. I'm wearing a white shirt. It comes off. Black shirt goes on. Grab my gun bag. Pull out the black gun. Throw in the can, load up a magazine, SS-109, throw all that crap in the truck, and I am hauling ass into town to the sound of the gunfire. Window down, listening for this, right?
Yes.
I get about a mile and a half up the road, and off in the distance, just above the trees, what do I see? Fireworks. What in the living hell are we celebrating on May 9th? What is there to celebrate on May 9th, Dave? I still don't know. 5 or 6 days later, I still don't know what they were having. So right. Turn around, go back home, reverse the entire process.
That's so
right?
funny.
Put everything away. So
you remember,
but it was about 90 seconds from the time I made my decision till I was pulling out of the driveway.
You remember
on
how
my
4th
way.
Of July was when you were a cop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they down all the airships because they don't want them shot
yeah,
at.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, it's all interesting right. stuff.
Sex bots.
Yeah, this is...
Yeah, I know, Bill's like, really, are we going there?
Yeah, occasionally, Dave brings up topics at lunch just before the show, and I'm like, if you really want to go over that, okay.
Okay.
This is one of those times.
On the Dave Champion Show, I talk often about this, what I consider to be an avalanche that's approaching the world, but I'm concerned about America, concerning robots and automation. I think you can take all the things that you don't like about government, about society, about culture. You can take the Federal Reserve System, the IMF, fiat currency system, corrupt Congress, unaccountable police. You can take all of that and hundreds, put a gigantic... It's not going to matter a damn in comparison to how robotics and automation are going, the upheaval it's going to cause in our society. It's going to... Everything else is going to pale in comparison. Now, that's obviously the bad, well, I don't want to say bad, scary side of it. We'll see how it pans out. I don't have a crystal ball, but it doesn't look good. Now, like anything, you know, say a firearm, person can use it for good or evil, right? Okay. So when we say these robotics and automation are going to come along and it's going to be one of the most challenging, difficult times in human history, economically, as far as sustaining ourselves and so forth, there's always what some people might consider the good side, which is, instead of robots, sex bots. Okay. Now, did I just, you know, pull this out of my... No, I did not. Okay. I've read several articles about this over the last couple of months. Futurists who were writing about this, there was actually a video that came out from some... technology show, like sort of like the Consumer Electronics Show, but not.
Right. Okay.
where they were actually putting on a demonstration of a, it didn't even look like a human hand, but it was a robot that was designed for the purpose of giving a hand job. Okay. And of course, then that leads, and they had a video showing this device, and they've got the technology reporter there. And
this is part of the marketing of this
technology,
yes. I take it?
And they're talking about the fact...
Imagine imagine just the amount of business from truckers alone.
You know. they are saying within 10 years. Now, again, they don't have crystal balls either, but these guys are normally, these futurists are normally pretty spot on. Within 10 years, we're going to have robots that are made to look physically attractive, and they will have components that will feel good when something is inserted into them, or they get inserted into something, any human being, and that these are going to, for many people, take the place of real human sexual partners. Now,
do they come with mother-in-laws and spiteful friends? Anything such
as
that?
Listen.
Just
I mean,
how far does it go?
Okay. Imagine.
Okay.
Now, you got me going in a bad direction mentally. You know, my thing is, okay, it seems a little weird to be humping a robot. Okay. This is very impersonal, lack of emotion. I can't imagine it would be anything that would thrill me. But imagine whatever fantasy you come up with. I mean,
would you program it into your computer and download it?
Who knows?
Upload it to your robot?
Who knows what the future holds?
You know, it's interesting.
There's
a movie that's coming out, and I've seen the previews for it. I don't recall the name. I'm not really much into sci-fi-ish movies all that much, but it's about, as I understand the preview, some guy that develops a female android with emotions and sensuality, and he starts getting involved with this android and starts having feelings and emotions. And
he does, and the android does.
He does.
Okay.
I don't know about the android. I haven't followed along, but just this conversation makes me think of that. And it's a newer movie that's going to be coming out. Might be out this weekend or next. Might be released tomorrow or a week from tomorrow. I don't know, but I've seen the previews for it.
Life imitates art. Art imitates life.
Yeah,
something along those lines.
Yeah,
I just think that where we're going with robotics is where our culture, where our society, where in fact the world is going.
More than just building cars.
Way more.
More than just nanotechnology assembling stuff.
Every single facet of our lives and our human nature are going to be affected by robotics.
Very, very interesting.
We'll be right back. After a lengthy commercial interlude where we discussed the subject from the last segment, we are back, and now it is time for all right. You have heard me in the past talk about how women want to be considered equal in the workplace, but yet they don't act like they want to be equal in the workplace. You've heard me talk about how businesses don't practice proper etiquette and whatnot. What the heck is up with hyper-emotional men? You know, let me start by saying I am in no way one of these guys who believe men should be stoic and unemotional. I think that was a broken paradigm when it was the primary paradigm of our society. It was broken then, it's broken now, it's nonsense. Men or women, we are born with emotional content, emotion and intellect. Those are the two things that as human beings we constantly trade off upon. That said, typically, men are born, they're wired, I think I would want to say it that way, that they're not usually as emotional as women. I'm generalizing, there are clearly exceptions to the rule. And my idea of how men should act is that when business is at hand, when things need to be put out, I talked with Bill earlier about when a confrontation is necessary, man up, have the conversation. Don't get all girly if you're a man. Now, I don't know if this bothers anybody else, whether it's just me. I'll give you an example. Early on in the day, when the Dave Champion show went to television, there was a young man who was assisting, he had said he was going to promote the show to other networks and try and get the Dave Champion show to be on bigger and bigger networks. And months and months and months went by, and he kept telling me he was contacting this organization, that organization. You know, hey, thumbs up, good job, great. Well, one day, one of these documents, I forget how it came into my possession, but the document came into my possession that he was sending off to these networks. And I looked at it, and from a business basis, I was appalled. It was on cheesy, cheap, yellowed paper. It was looked like it was done more on an old typewriter. There was no, you know, left margin justification. The sentences some went on and some were a little short sentence. I mean, they actually just didn't wrap like they're supposed to in a business communication. The language that was used and the pitch that was being made was not anything that I could imagine a business person would look at it and say, hey, well, there's something I'm interested in. In other words, in every way possible, it was not a professional offering. So in a meeting with this individual and the station manager and some other people, I said, I came across a copy of this. Is this what you're sending to all these networks? Yes, it is. Okay. Now, remember, if you're sending it to the same person again, you get like one bite at the apple, because if they remember the name, for instance, the Dave Champion Show, and they saw something very unprofessional, they're not going to have, if they remember the name Dave Champion Show, they're not going to have a good impression of that if you try and take a second bite of the apple. So you want to put your best foot forward. So I said to him, I said, why is this being done this way? If we need to go out and buy some good paper, I'll buy some good paper. Do we not have a computer? Where is this being done? As far as the language, the actual pitch, how come in all these months you've been pursuing this, I've just presumed you were doing a highly professional job, and thumbs up, pat on the back. I look at this, why haven't you been talking to me? I used to sell, you know, $200,000-$300,000 high-tech items to major corporations. I've done high-end corporate sales. I would no way say I'm a wonderful, excellent salesperson. I know some people who are fantastic at it, but I'm pretty good. Why are we not talking about this? Why is something like this going out the door? Okay. Now, to me, that's a prudent business discussion to have. His result was he severed all contact with the Dave Champion Show and its production. He unfriended me on Facebook, and I have never seen him socially since then. And when he does see me in something like a restaurant around town now, the minute he sees me coming, he puts his head down like this. For having what was a necessary and proper business discussion, which was meant to show what was being done that was less than appropriate, and to say, let's put our heads together and really ratchet this up to where it needs to be. If we're going to do this, do it right. Bill and I have talked about this all the time. We've even mentioned it on the show. If you're going to engage in a business, do it right. Don't do it 50%, and what he was doing was like 9%. Don't do that. Give it 100% or don't do it at all. So when I had what I consider to be a prudent business discussion with him, and I didn't castigate him, I was asking questions. Why are we doing it this way? He became highly emotional and has never spoken to me again since that day. I don't understand why men cannot come. Maybe it's my military background. Maybe it's my law enforcement background. I don't know. Maybe it's just my natural temperament. I don't understand why men can't have a conversation and call it what it is and then move the hell on. Bill, what is going on with that kind of nonsense?
When you sold $200,000 to $300,000 high-tech things, were those early versions of the sex bots?
Yeah, they... Should have seen those.
Who knows? Yeah,
should have seen those monsters.
The whole get the sales team in here.
That's right. Bring in the engineers.
You know, Dave, you and I have always been able to enjoy very direct conversations when they needed to happen. And there's been occasions where if you wanted to address something with me directly that I might have otherwise been sensitive about, and vice versa, and it's never been a problem.
Right.
Because we understand that. Look, you know what? Sometimes things just have to get done.
As a matter of fact, at lunch today, I tried to be sensitive to something. You said, don't do that.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Right. You had the kid glove on. You can take it off.
Yeah, right.
But I get it. Some people are a little bit more sensitive than others, and it's interesting. Like in my relationship, sometimes my girlfriend will say, well, you know, I don't say or do that to you, so why do you have to say or do that to me, and vice versa. And, you know, men and women are we're Mars and Venus sort of thing, you know? There are major differences in the genetics that make up men and women. And around the world, it's different too. I mean, you might be able to very well have that direct sort of a conversation with somebody who, say, is Korean because they want to get done as a society. But yet, if you go to
France, not so much.
Yeah, in France, it's going to be, let's go out and have some wine and cigars and, you know, wee. Who knows? But I don't get it either when anybody, for that matter, is just too emotional or so unwilling to learn or get to the bottom of something. They want to take the friggin' scenic route, which is paved with velvet, I guess. I don't get it.
Yeah. It seems that we talked about, you and I on this show, that political correctness has come into the business place. And it seems so has what I consider an overabundance of emotion. To me, male or female, when you walk in the door to work, you have to shelve a certain amount of your personal emotional content. It's work. Things need to be said, in my opinion, and clearly my opinion is the minority view these days, okay? And I recognize that. But my view is that when you walk into the workplace, things need to be said, okay? Now, there's a ways of saying things and ways of saying things, and you know me. I'm pretty much the same guy as I sit here on TV talking as I am with you in private and the rest of the world. I don't have multiple different ways I approach things. I don't think I'm particularly harsh or condemnatory, but when somebody has done something which is foolhardy or mistaken or needs to be tuned up, it's not achieving the mutual business goal.
You're on it.
And it needs to be called for what it is. Yeah. Look, here was a mistake, here was a mistake, here was a mistake, here was a mistake. Okay, now that we've defined the four mistakes, how do we repair these? Are they repairable? Do we need to take these and get them off and pull something else in, do something completely different? Can we repair it? Can we just put a better patina on it? How do we go about conducting whatever the business at hand is? How do we go about conducting it in the most productive manner for the business? Because the business has one goal, success. To me, the goal of business is not to have everybody go home at 5 o'clock. I feel so good about my day today. I don't know how that paradigm has come into the business place.
One of the wealthiest guys I've ever known. This is a guy that started in 1988 in his garage, learning about this whole new concept called email. In 1996, wow, he sold his business of over 200 people to Yahoo.
Right on.
And made
a few bucks.
A couple million bucks and then some. Eight or nine figures he made. And with this being said, he and I actually talked one time. He was a student of mine, and a shooting student. And he came out, we were chatting, and he said, you know, everybody talks about, you know, their advice is enjoy what you do. As long as you enjoy what you do, nothing else matters.
You'll never work a day in your life if you do something you love, which, by the way, I agree with.
Well, his response was this. He said, forget all that. He says, I really hated what I was doing. I don't like technology. I'm not a tech guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned about an industry just as far as I needed to until I hired other people, younger people, tech people, to actually make it better. And he said he didn't enjoy it. He didn't like anything of it. It got to the point of having over 200 employees, which he felt for himself was out of control. He was happy to sell it and get out. And he says, you don't need to enjoy what you're doing. He says, you need to be good at what you're doing. Go in there, get it done, make as much money as you can, and then if at all possible you can exit early and enjoy life, do it. Do your time, make the money, and get out.
Nice.
If you enjoy it, fine, but that is not a criteria to success.
It is not.
And it's just it's a different way of approaching it.
It is. And I'm sure people, for instance, no offense to the people who work at Walmart, I'm sure not everybody who works at Walmart thinks that working at Walmart is the finest job ever. I'm sure the people who have worked for me in my various enterprises at times have not thought that the position they held with my enterprise was the plum job of all time for them. I get that. But it's still the real world, and it's still the business environment It's not your living room. It's not with your spouse. It's not with your kids. It's not huggy, huggy, warm, sweet. It's
keep your emotions and your pee-pee garbage in check. I got to tell you, I am like you. In any sort of a business or professional environment, you want to be as efficient as you can and get things done. And some people are offended if you come up to them and ask them about actually doing their job or doing it properly.
Yes.
You know what? If you're offended about doing your job or doing it properly, you don't belong here. Yeah. There's the
door. I recently said something that was critical of somebody in the business environment, and somebody who was standing there got upset because they heard me say something critical.
Wow. Unreal.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. Now, it's time for my rant. You know what really grinds my gears? When people swarm onto something that isn't theirs, just because they want to be included in something that so many other people are included in. Most recently, Mother's Day. If you're the mother of a human child, either you gave birth to that child, adopted that child, foster child, stepchild, maybe it's a long-term relationship but you're not actually married, and the man you're with has children and you help raise those children. All great reasons to celebrate Mother's Day. If you have never had a child by natural birth or any of the things I just talked about, test tube, whatever it might be, and you have pets, that's not Mother's Day. Oh, I have three cats and a parakeet. Oh, it's Mother's Day. I'm the mother to my pets. No, you're a pet owner. And if you actually do a search online for pet owner related appreciation days, there's no less than 60 of them a year. So go on there, find a few that you like, write it on the calendar, show it to your pet, and let your parakeet celebrate with you, or your dog, or cat, or iguana, or whatever else you might have that you feel that you're a mother to that is a completely different species of animal. If you have human children that you care for, then Mother's Day is all about you. And thank you, God bless you, for being a good mother. If you have animals, that's not Mother's Day. Stop trying to latch in there. Matter of fact, I posted this on Facebook, and a friend of mine put on there that they hope in the future, when Bruce Jenner is done with his transition, he doesn't latch on to Mother's Day. Dave, have you ever celebrated Mother's Day?
No. Never once.
No, nor have I.
Right, right.
You know, and have you ever been with a woman who has never bared children, had children, and just somehow or another wanted to be included or said thank you when somebody called them on Mother's Day because they had pets or a horse or something?
No.
No. Well, good for you.
That's just weird.
Good for you. It is odd.
Yeah.
It is odd. You know, but my girlfriend was trying to latch onto that. Now, granted, I have four daughters, and when they're around, she helps out. Well, three that are younger age, she helps out. So I can see that.
Yeah, okay?
Because my kids are around enough, and she helps out with that.
She, to some extent, fulfills that role.
She does. But she was initially trying to wedge her way in there because we have dogs. It's like, you know, I watch the dogs constantly. I deal with these three mutant animals.
Little troublemakers.
Yeah, I mean, I love my dogs. We got two pits in a lab. They're all great animals. But I got to tell you, we have them because of her. If it were just me, I wouldn't have any animals.
No. I love your dogs, by the way.
I think they're great, too. But the thing is, there's enough caring and deal with and scheduling and like that, because you got to realize my girlfriend's not there 2 weeks out of the month. She's home 2 weeks of the month. She's gone 2 weeks of
right.
the month.
Right, and then when you both want to travel.
Yeah, and so I'm with the dogs every week of the month. She's there half the time. And she spends a lot of time with them and a lot of good quality time and like that. If it were up to me, we wouldn't have any animals at all. None. Just because, I mean, like I enjoy having an animal now and again. Three dogs that all have their own personalities. Oh, they have their own disagreements. They can be rambunctious. They can, you know, just...
Are you a cat guy or a dog guy?
No, I'm more of a dog guy than a cat guy. I used to like cats, and then I've had three or four bad experiences with cats in a row, and I'm done.
Oh, no.
As a matter of fact, one of my dogs... before she was my dog, when she was a previous owner's dog, was a cat killing machine, is what I was told. 15, 16 cats in a couple of years.
Wow.
So it's a good dog. That keeps me from ever having to bring a cat into the house.
Yeah.
And,
can I tell you a funny cat story? Can I jump into your rant for a minute here?
Yeah.
When I was a stepdad, the kids wanted to bring over a cat from dad's house. And I was like, oh, but, you know, I love the kids to death. All right, you want to have your cat, you know, against my better judgment. So they bring this cat over. This is not a loving cat, okay? And you know, cat's around like 2 weeks. I understand animals, you have to have, they have to acclimate to you and you to them. And so the cat's been around 2 or 3 weeks, and it was in the kitchen, and I needed it to be not in the kitchen. I forget why. And I reached down, you know, gently, I'm not being harsh or fast or anything. I reach down, and I grab this cat, and I pick it. This cat just spins around and just goes to town on my arms. Okay, the cat flies across the room, and I'm like, "Where are my welding gloves?"
Okay. I'm serious.
I've been there. I was going to put the welding gloves on, track that cat down, and do something really, really ugly, because I was infuriated, right?
Right.
I'm not trying to hurt the cat, and the cat just shredded me, right? I'm going to have my day. And I'm literally coming around the corner out of the kitchen, out to the front hall to go out to the garage to find my gloves, right? And I think,
not my cat.
No, no, no. That wasn't my thought.
No.
My thought was, and when I'm done doing what is in my mind to do to this cat, how are the kids going to view me? So I didn't.
I've had a similar situation with a cat that was like that. And the last cat that was in my household, actually, the cat and the dog that, unbeknownst to us at the time, used to eat cats, were having a little tryst in the bedroom. The cat was new to the house, and we used to keep them separated. My girlfriend thought that it would be good to have them acclimate in the bedroom one night while we're trying to sleep. Not a good thing. So I'm like, all right. The cat and the dog are all hyped up. Take the dog outside, please. And I meant outside of the house. Well, she thought I meant outside of the bedroom. So I got the cat, got it calmed down, picked the cat up, go to leave the bedroom to take the cat into a different room, and there's the dog. That cat went crazy and sunk 3 teeth into this hand. This is my shooting hand.
Right.
I got infected the worst I've ever had.
Cat
as a matter
bites,
of fact,
no bueno.
Yeah, it was so sensitive. That it was, this happened in December. Over the next couple of weeks, whenever I'm sleeping and the heat would come on and that soft little bit of air you never really feel touched my hand, I'd wake up.
Wow.
This was the most pain and discomfort I've ever felt. And Dave, I've been shot and this hurt worse. So that cat ended up being persona non grata in the house anymore. But I gotta tell you, I actually had paralysis in my trigger finger for more than 2 years because of that. And it was just a couple of months after all this happened, 3 months after all this happened, I was on the set of Top Shot doing competition shooting on this, you know, competition show, reality type competition show, if you will, with the trigger finger that didn't work very well and still had discomfort, some pain, and not even, but maybe 40% range of motion. So
I think we should call these not real life shows.
Yeah. So anyhow, go back to this cat story. Yes. You had opened it up by saying you were stepfather. Did you celebrate Father's Day then?
But because you know when real dad, you know, what did they call bio dad?
Yeah.
When bio dad is 25 minutes away, it's for the step. It's a rough deal.
Right, but I mean, did you get like a card anything like, you know, happy
birthday? Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like they came over and cooked and baked a cake and all like that.
Right. And, you know,
not at the same level.
And I don't think Father's Day is ever really like Mother's Day.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they would come in and say happy Father's Day, and especially the younger boys would like, you know, come charging into the bedroom in the early morning and leap into the bed and, you know, just fart around and happy Father's Day and, you know.
Yeah, you know, Mother's Day is it's a big family event day generally. Biggest day of the year for flowers. One of the biggest days for going out to dinner. It's a big deal. Father's Day, and you know, women, they want that. Mothers want that. They want their children, their family around. They want to go through all of this. Fathers, on the other hand, it's like, you know, here's some new slippers. Yeah. Mom went out and bought you a 12-pack, and here's the remote. We're not going to bother you all day.
Yeah.
Right? That's Father's Day.
Here's the card. Let's go bowling.
Right? Yeah. It's like sometimes for Father's Day, the mother or the wife, girlfriend, whatever, will say, you know what? It's Father's Day. I'm going to take the kids and leave you alone.
Right.
So you can hang out and do whatever you want, right? Hey, cool. You know, NASCAR's on or you know, hey, there's the ball game or whatever it might be.
Sure.
You know, and they come back. You got 8 empty beer bottles next to you. You're belching a little bit. You know, Pizza Man's been there. The box is there. Hey, happy Father's Day to me. You know,
I mean,
there's a difference between Father's Day and Mother's Day. And it's funny because like in the last segment, you were talking about the emotional level things. There's an expectation level too. It's like, you know, if for anniversaries, it's different too. Or even Valentine's Day. Like for me, Valentine's Day is a death sentence. It really is. It's you know, your wife or girlfriend in a lot of cases, and cases I've been involved in, they set the bar so high. It's not so much can I achieve that, it's how much can I fail to the least amount, right? I'm not going to live to that. So how high can I get and my failure still be acceptable?
Wow.
Sort of thing. And sometimes anniversaries are the same way. And there's just different expectation levels there. And
by the way, I don't even do Valentine's Day. I'm very clear I don't do Valentine's Day.
You know, that's where I am.
It's just a contrivance to get money. Like, you know,
my girlfriend's all over. She loves the whole Valentine's Day thing. And I'm like, no. And I'll tell you something that I have done, which is it's not fair. But then again, either is life. My girlfriend and I met. We started a date. We ended up living together. But we don't have any hard date like when we first met, when our first date was, when she moved in. We don't have any of those hard dates.
You got to get to the girl stuff. The first kiss.
Oh, yeah, she's not all like that.
That first intimate night.
Yeah. Here's the deal. We don't have an anniversary.
Whoa, you just said she's all into Valentine's Day. She is like that.
She is, but yeah, I'm just saying, we don't actually have an anniversary, as it were.
Yeah.
So there's another day that I'm out of, I don't have to celebrate. So, about once a year, she'll say, you know, I want an anniversary. It's like, okay, how about, and I'll name her birthday? No. How about, and I'll name my birthday? No. How about, and I'll name Valentine's Day? No. I'll name stuff that already exists that I already have to do time for, right?
Right.
And no. I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you then. So then the conversation is over. We don't get back to it.
This sounds like the work discussion you just had.
Yeah, kind of.
Doesn't matter whether you like it, I'll do it anyway.
I mean, you know, of course I love my girlfriend, and it's a good relationship. It's a very good relationship. And second longest relationship I've ever been in, next to my last marriage.
Huh?
And in fact, it's going to surpass that in another couple of years. So anyhow, just my point being is that you have these various dates that people want to glom on, and then you've got these women that have never really been mothers to human children that want to celebrate Mother's Day. And I kind of get it. If you have a man child that you have to take care of, your living boyfriend or whatever, your husband, and you don't have any actual children of your own, he's kind of a man child that you have to baby and keep up there. I kind of get that.
Yeah.
I do.
That's ugly.
It is, because you and I both know, we know guys that have been man children and women that have had to take care of it, so I kind of get that. But
terrible.
Other than that, I mean, come on, be reasonable.
Yeah, I hear women talk about that all the time, that, you know, they already have one child and they're referring to their boyfriend or their husband. It's like, right.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of relationship that is, but not in my world.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Now it's segment 4. It's time that we would go into our viewer mailbag. But honestly, there wasn't anything good in there this week. So we're going to come up with our own. But still, right here, DaveAndBillShow@gmail.com. Send your queries to us there.
And do a good job.
Yeah, come up with something decent. You know, don't take it harsh like in segment 3. Don't be a bunch of girly men about it. Send us something here that's good for us to talk about.
For instance, we'd like to hear Dave and Bill expand more on the sex bots. You know, that kind of thing.
Don't send us that one. But another place you can go to totallyunprepared.info, if we can get that up real quick. And that's where you can see all of the videos, and you can also audio download the shows, totallyunprepared.info. Also, it has our email address listed on that page at the very bottom, yes. And it's in descending order. Most recent show is first, and then the first show is all the way at the bottom.
And if you're a Facebook person, there's also a Totally Unprepared Facebook page where each week we post a show.
Yes, and a YouTube page, but totallyunprepared.info, it is a direct link from our YouTube page.
Yeah.
Anyhow, what we're going to talk about this week comes from our own ideals here, and that is the 17th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So some of you are already rolling your eyes, oh, man, yep, that one's a doozy. Others that don't know.
Right. So people are like, 17th Amendment?
Yeah, the 17th Amendment amended the Constitution of the United States.
Isn't that the one that bars like the quartering of soldiers?
That's number three. So the 17th Amendment... It amended the Constitution, which originally told us that our House of Representatives mm-hmm. were elected by a popular vote,
mm-hmm.
and the U.S. Senate was elected or appointed by the legislature of each state, each individual state. The legislature would decide who the two senators were.
Yes. Now, okay. Most Americans alive today have never lived under the original system. Many Americans are not even aware that the system that they've lived under for the last 40, 50, 60, 70 years, that system is not how the founders, the people who designed our Federalist system, it is not how they decided that, I'm sorry, not how they designed the system to work. They designed it to work another way, and as we go enter the 20th century, when one man, one vote style democracy became almost a cult, okay, there was a push, I believe, financially fostered and promoted by certain nefarious parties, to cause a sort of a revolution in thinking so that people would rise up and say, whoa, wait a second. The state should no. If we're a true democracy, there's that word. Okay, if we're a true democracy, then we should be choosing those senators, not those curmudgeons in the state legislature.
Right. So, and the way it was designed was in the House of Representatives, it was by apportionment based on population for each state,
mm-hmm.
and the population within those districts elected their representatives, certain amount of representatives per however many people it was. Then they go off to Washington. Then you end up with the senators. So all the states had equal representation.
Right.
The House of Representatives, the people had it within each state, but pretty much equal by, say, it's 100,000 people per representative all across the country. More populous states, of course, had more representatives. But each state had two equal representation. So you have the lower house and the upper house, they call it the House and the Senate. And they had to agree that legislation coming through both houses to get passed and sent off to the president, they had to agree that it was good both for the people and for the states before it would get passed.
Right. So,
and the senators were responsible to the state legislature.
Correct, which is the critical difference. So what you were saying is, in other words, let's take now where California is one of the most populous states, and Maine, one of the least populous states. They both have two senators sitting in the upper house, what
yes.
they refer to as the upper house. But you're right, in the original model, the one put together by Madison and Jefferson and the whole constitutional convention, the senators were selected by the people sitting in the state legislature. And they were accountable back to the people sitting in the state legislature. They were not accountable.
For interest to the state.
Correct. The state in its corporate capacity, not the state as in several million people.
Right.
Okay. And the idea was that the governor and the elected officials sitting in the legislature would jealously guard the prerogatives of the state.
Sure. Yeah. The states have interest. Essentially, we had Antonin Scalia. Mm-hmm. Justice Antonin Scalia recently say in a talk that he gave that you actually turned me onto, that he said essentially states' rights are gone. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of this back because of the 17th Amendment.
No, he specifically stated that.
He
said, this is damn near a quote, he said, forget states' rights. That died with the 17th Amendment.
Okay.
He was just that blunt, that short, that concise. Here's the thing. If you're ever arguing a case for states' rights and it gets all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and he's still alive, he's 79, you could ask him to recuse himself because he's publicly said there's no such thing. He said, forget states' rights. They died with the 17th Amendment.
And this guy, this is the one justice that holds most true to the original intent of the Constitution.
I might argue that. But he is known as, popularly known as, one of the originalists.
Yes.
You know, one of the three primary originalists.
So what's the net effect of this? The net effect is that the federal government, when legislation goes through both houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives, and it is to provide the federal government with more power and authority over their 17 enumerated authorities, mm-hmm. which by the Constitution it says they can't do, but they go ahead and do it. There's nobody in either house that has the best interest of the states and the 9th and 10th Amendment states' rights in mind to say, whoa, and let's think about this. So this ends up giving the federal government basically all kinds of extra authority, providing them with extra authority that they otherwise wouldn't have, where we, in our own state capacities, have less ability to control our own destinies within our own state, within our own natural resources and all that good stuff, because the senators are voted in by a popular vote of the people. And who are they beholden to? They're beholden to the companies and individuals that send the most money to them, like the people in the House, rather than being beholden to the state legislature, because that is who, like in Nevada, there's, you know, what, about 65 people that they would actually have to lobby to mm-hmm. to get the endorsement to actually be appointed and go up to Washington as a senator from the state.
Right. Now, H.L. Mencken, you're familiar with the name?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Very famous essayist. He had many, many qualifications.
He was Hispanic?
No.
Essay?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, essay.
He wrote predominantly in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and one of the things he was known for was that he was no lover of democracy. And let me share what I mean by that. His view was, and this goes to what you're saying about who are they beholden to, right? Who are the senators beholden to? Today, you and I would agree that most of them are beholden to the largest corporations who make the most generous contributions to their reelection campaign.
Certainly.
And then what they do is they take this mass called the voters in their jurisdiction, their constituents, and they play them. Okay, they manipulate them. They give speeches which are disingenuous, and then they go back up to the Hill and they make decisions that have little or nothing, no bearing upon the speech that they made to their constituents, and it's all a big sham these days, right? H.L. Mencken's philosophy, and this goes to why it would have been, in his mind, more prudent for them to be reporting back and be accountable to a small group of, say, for the sake of argument, more sophisticated, astute, intelligent men. His thing was, how is it beneficial if you take somebody for the sake of argument who has an IQ of 70, who has never earned more than minimum wage, always been a renter, never been an owner, tried several businesses, constantly failed, unsuccessful in life, unsuccessful in family relations, and that person now has an equal vote with somebody who has a life experience, success, acumen, astuteness of a Bill Carnes. That person now is, when it comes to the political process, is completely equal to you. When that person, if you were to say, tell me what Article 2 of the United States Constitution does, how would I know that? Tell me what the Third Amendment does. I don't know. Tell me what the 26th Amendment does. I don't know. And that person who knows not a damn thing about America, its politics, its judicial, its history of the, its judicial decisions, what controls the Constitution, the laws, the political process that we have. He knows nothing about any of this, right? But he now becomes, as far as selecting the people who are going to run the country, he now becomes an absolute equal of somebody like a Bill Carnes. So, and you're probably hearing this, and you're saying, okay, this is not a good picture. Well, that was what H.L. Mencken was saying, was that democracy, his view was, it's highly questionable whether it's a blessing.
You know, it's interesting, in the Declaration of Independence, as we call it, it's actually not, there's no document titled the Declaration of Independence. We call it that. Mm. It's the Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America. That's the name of the document. Look it up. Anyhow, in there, it says all men are created equal. And what it comes to is all men are created politically equal.
Yes.
You know, I've actually had people tell me, you know, for every $10,000 in value that you have, you should get a vote, which would then mean all of the ultra-rich political players would have untold amounts of votes, and then folks that don't...
Oh, you mean like it works right now?
Yeah, and it's like they kind of do with the money, and I don't agree with that.
Because, you know, dollars is speech, according to the United States Supreme Court.
It is. And contrary to popular belief, just so everybody knows, this, we do not live in a democracy. The United States is not a democracy by design.
The founders said, I forget which one this quote is from, that a democracy always destroys itself. I'm paraphrasing.
It does. And there's been many phrases. I remember during the Constitutional Convention, there's a famous story about a woman that asked one of the founders.
Franklin.
I think, yeah, Franklin, you know, what sort of...
What have you given us?
Yeah, and his response was, a republic if you can keep it. And if you look at Article 4, Section 4, the U.S. Constitution, it says that a republican form of government is guaranteed.
Yes, it does indeed.
And just to understand, the entire Constitution...
guaranteed to the states, which no longer have their independent representation.
In, yeah, yeah. Just so you know, the Constitution's only 4 pages long. The Bill of Rights is another page, and then the other amendments that have gone through are 2 more. You got a grand total, Dave, of 7 pages to read the entire Constitution and all the amendments. Someday take a look at it. I actually have it on audiobook. You can listen to it.
Someday take a look
take
at
a
it.
Look at
okay,
it.
You get a knuckle bump for that one. Someday take a look at it.
We'll be back next week. Thanks very much for tuning in.
Take care.